Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. It's your future. Let Zurich help you protect it. Talk to us today about life and serious illness cover.
Well, we're returning now to those seismic political events in the United States. And as you heard there in the news headlines, Kamala Harris has made her first public remarks since being endorsed by Joe Biden as the nominee for president. The vice president is continuing to earn support and endorsements from several top Democrats as momentum builds and potential challengers pledge her their support. Well, we're joined now by John Brennan, who is former director of the CIA. And John, you're welcome to the programme. You've served under six U.S. presidents, from Jimmy Carter to Barack Obama. How would you describe what's happening at the moment in the Democratic Party?
Well, it's rather unprecedented in terms of having an individual who is the presumptive nominee of his party to step aside this late in the campaign season. But I do think that there had been growing momentum over the past several months to encourage President Biden to pass the torch to someone else. And after the debate performance that went so badly for him, I think the feeling was that it was almost inevitable as the more and more Democrats were calling for him to step aside. So his announcement yesterday, I think, was welcome relief to many Democrats who believed that they needed to have somebody who was going to be more electable than Joe Biden in the November election. So I detect a growing enthusiasm within the Democratic Party, as well as unity. As you pointed out, there are a growing number of American Democratic legislators and politicians who have united behind Kamala Harris as the Democratic nominee.
I wonder, though, is she more electable than Joe Biden? I see the New York Times writing today that she's trailed Donald Trump in nearly every national and battleground state polled so far. And the most recent college poll of Pennsylvania, just 42% of likely voters there said they viewed her favourably, which is well short of the 51% who had a favourable view of Mr. Biden in 2020, or ahead of the 2020 election. Is she more electable?
Well, I think we're going to see in the coming months whether or not she's able to generate additional support among the Democratic base, as well as some of the independents and even among some of the mainstream Republicans. She clearly is a lot younger than Joe Biden, so she is not hobbled by the same perceptions of frailty that Joe Biden has been. She's 59 years old, and so therefore she also has quite an accomplished record. She was the state attorney general in California, a state senator. She was a prosecutor. And I think in the past 2 years, she has really come along as vice president. So I think the polls to date have been basically a hypothetical. What happens if Kamala Harris would become the nominee? I think now that she clearly has the inside track and I think will be basically nominated at the Democratic convention in a few weeks, we will see whether or not those favorability ratings and support for her is going to increase.
She does also, though, have an incumbency problem, doesn't she? Because, again, the polls over the last couple of months have shown consistently that a lot of people didn't want Trump or Biden, and they were looking for a fresh face. They're concerned about the direction of the economy. They're concerned about the direction when it comes to immigration. She's linked to both of those issues and doesn't really tick that box of voters who say they're looking for change.
Well, yes, she is part of this Biden-Harris administration, clearly, and she has been involved heavily in a number of issues, not just the border, but also on women's rights in terms of supporting the rights of women for abortion. So yes, she's going to be associated with Joe Biden. And in some respects, there's many good aspects of that I think people will be welcoming. But we'll see whether or not she's going to try to distance herself somewhat from some of those more controversial policies, including on the international front in terms of President Biden's resolute support for Israel. So we'll have to see how she navigates what I think could be, challenging shoals in the months ahead. But I think she is better positioned to defeat Donald Trump than Joe Biden would have been in November.
And to speak to some of the positives, because I've been focusing on the challenges that she might face, but I have heard some analysis suggesting that she will be able to take on the Republicans very strongly on the issue of abortion, for example, which a lot of, I think, Democrats believe they haven't been challenged on, the Republican position on abortion, particularly, actually, J.D. Vance, but also Donald Trump.
Yes, she has been at the forefront of that, speaking on behalf of women's rights here in the United States. And I do think it's going to be a central issue in the upcoming election, because a lot of women across the United States, and a lot of men as well, really do believe that that is something that women should be able to decide, as opposed to having lawmakers put restrictions on what women can do, even up to the time of if their lives are at risk during a pregnancy. So I do think Kamala Harris is going to have a number of benefits that, you know, Joe Biden would not have had. And again, we're going to see how this is going to play out. But she is somebody who, again, is very smart, very accomplished in her own right. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not there's going to be a debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, because she is, I think, more than up to the task as a former prosecutor and also someone who has real command of the facts, and something that Donald Trump really does not have.
Of course, we're speaking, John Brennan, very much as if she already has the nomination, which she doesn't. But do you think that that is a done deal effectively at this stage, that there won't be a challenger?
I do. There's still going to be a process involved, and there'll have to be a formal nomination procedure leading up to the convention. There was some speculation that a senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, was going to challenge her, but he has said that he's not going to do that. And nobody else has raised their hand. And again, the number of endorsements from Democratic governors, members of Congress, the Senate, and the House, I think clearly there is this building support for her, and I don't see that that's going to be disrupted in the next several weeks.
It has been noted over the last 24 hours that former President Barack Obama, who I know you worked very closely with, has not yet endorsed Kamala Harris. I wonder, why do you think that is? Are you surprised at that, a woman of colour out there front and centre, and he hasn't come out straight away to support her?
Well, I think President Obama is very respectful of the democratic process, and although President Clinton, former President Clinton, has endorsed her, as well as Hillary Clinton and many others, I think Barack Obama is very much supportive of Joe Biden and does not want to take away any of the spotlight on the real importance of Joe Biden's decision to step away. And I think he's trying to make sure that Joe Biden is given the appropriate accolades that he deserves for taking such a courageous and unselfish act. I do think Barack Obama is very much supportive of Kamala Harris, and ultimately will come out and support her. I don't know when that will be, but I have no doubt at all that he is going to be firmly and resolutely behind the Democratic nominee, who I do believe is going to be Kamala Harris.
Okay, and if we take that as read, that it will be Kamala Harris who's the Democratic nominee, how important then do you think is the vice presidential ticket, or who's on the vice presidential ticket, and who do you think that could or should be?
I think it is going to be more important, I think, than a lot of other vice presidential tickets. Choices. I think it probably will be a governor from one of the states that is in contention, potentially. So you have Governor Cooper of North Carolina. You have Governor Shapiro of Pennsylvania. Gretchen Whitmer of Michigan, the governor, has already said that she doesn't want to the vice presidential spot. There's a governor from Kentucky, Governor Andy Beshear, who's a Democrat as well. And I do think since Kamala Harris has that Senate experience, she wants somebody with a state executive experience, a governor. And having somebody from one of those key states who's able to bring not only the Democratic base behind the vice presidential nominee, but also centrists and Republicans. So I do think she's going to be very thoughtful in this, but I would be very surprised if it's not a governor of one of those states.
Okay, well, we shall await and see on your predictions on that one. This is not the only thing happening, of course, in the United States today. Just following the attempted shooting of former President Donald Trump, the U.S. Secret Service Director Kimberly Cheadle is before Congress today. And this is the first round of congressional oversight of the attempted assassination. And she has told Congress that, quote, we failed. She said the assassination attempt on the former president on July 13th is, quote, the most significant operational failure at the Secret Service in decades. What's your assessment of what happened with your expertise as a former CIA director?
Well, I clearly agree. It was an awful, awful failure. It never should have happened. And clearly, they didn't take the appropriate steps to secure that building for the roof where the shooter took that shot. So whether or not there was a lack of communication and coordination between the Secret Service and the local officials, the authorities, who also have responsibility for securing some of the surrounding perimeter, I think the investigation is going to reveal that. But I was watching the testimony of Director Cheadle. I think she's done a very good job in terms of saying that there's a thorough investigation and there will be a full accounting of it. And she's taken full accountability for it. But I do think this is something that needs to be looked at very carefully so that this never again happens, because the lives of very important people in the United States are very much at risk.
Yeah, I saw one of the points being made to her at that hearing today is that at the moment she and her organization look incompetent, but if the assassination attempt had been successful, that she and her organization would have been culpable is what was put to her today. And there have been calls for her resignation. How difficult will it be for her to retain confidence in her abilities to do her job?
Well, it's a long-standing Washington practice that when something like this happens, immediately people call for the director or the head of an organization or a department or agency to resign or be fired. But I do think it's important that she stay on for a period of time so that she can conduct this thorough review of what went on inside of the Secret Service, why there were these lapses, and to try to address them so it doesn't happen again. But there is, I think, still some question as to what went wrong, and they need to get to the bottom of that. But again, I think she has handled herself very well, demonstrates the real professionalism of individuals who rise to these positions in Washington. The director of the Secret Service is an exceptionally important position. They carry out their responsibilities every day in so many places because of the protectees that they have. And it's unfortunate, very unfortunate and tragic that this happened in Butler, Pennsylvania. But in every other instance over the past several years, I think the Secret Service has performed virtually flawlessly in terms of ensuring that the lives and safety and security of their protectees are well guarded.
Okay, I just might ask you just very finally, John, you wrote an opinion piece on MSNBC recently. You were talking about the recent ruling by the Supreme Court granting lifetime criminal immunity to presidents for official acts while in office, and you said that it was breathtaking in its dangerous implications for our nation's future. You obviously believe that this is potentially very, very dangerous.
I do, especially if someone is elected to the office of the presidency who is dishonest or corrupt or wants to try to suppress his or her political rivals. The powers of the presidency are tremendously broad and sweeping, and if an individual decided to use those authorities in a rather dictatorial fashion, an authoritarian fashion, and have immunity for it, I think the rule of law in the United States is very much at risk. And I really do think that the Supreme Court decision was misguided, wrongheaded, and also very threatening to our system of laws in the United States. I have full confidence that a Joe Biden or a Kamala Harris would not abuse the authorities of the presidency, but I don't have the same confidence when it's somebody like a Donald Trump or someone of that ilk who might, in fact, be elected president, because I do think that they could take full advantage of the immunity powers that the Supreme Court now has given them.
All right, John Brennan, very interesting to speak to you, and thank you for joining us.